Welcome to this week's episode. I'm your host, Jake Gershman, and I've got Brent Chope, Chief Revenue Officer, also known as the CRO of the San Francisco 49ers, and Andy Dolich, who was at one point the COO of the San Francisco 49ers. So we've got some former and current executives of the 49ers on today. Fellas, how are you?
We're great. We're separated by, what would you say, 18 miles, Brent, from where I am on the mean streets of Los Altos, California. And I don't even know, are you in Santa Clara or someplace else?
18 miles, three-hour drive right now.
Your three-hour drive might get you a three-hour flight to West Lafayette. So that's about equal.
Yeah, we're global. So talking about journeys, whether they're stuck in traffic on the 101, you and I, Brent, have been lucky enough, and also Jake, to have the Ohio University DNA in our systems. I'm curious, and actually I don't think you and I ever talked about this over all the time that we've known each other. When was the moment that it entered your brain, like, whatever I'm doing now, I don't want to do that. I want to go into sports. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. My father actually was a financial advisor for the majority of his career. So I was going down that path all the way until my sophomore year in college. And at that point, I actually got a bug in my ear from my former high school baseball coach to apply for an internship with a summer collegiate team in my college market. So that experience over that summer is really when I started shifting to the sports business side versus the finance side.
And the location, the name of the team, did you play the mascot? Was it Wood Bats? And tell us a bit about the multiple amount of jobs that you did while you were there.
Yeah, you read my notes. I did play the mascot once in a church service. That's a whole nother conversation. We'll leave that as is. But my title was a beautiful one. It was intern/director of media relations, which is pretty comical. I was the third highest ranking officer on the team as an intern, summer collegiate Wood Bat for the St. Cloud River Bats. They've now been renamed the Rocks. So I've got a lot of original gear from a team that no longer exists.
And that would be a perfect donation to One Warm Shirt. Incidentally, if anybody's listening, this is direct sponsorship here, Jake. For the last 6 years, I've been involved with the St. Anthony Foundation that serves the community in San Francisco, and we've created something called One Warm Shirt, and this year we added socks. And anybody that's got team names that have changed, have a lot of quadruple extra large stuff that people have given them as when they've played at golf tournaments or anything else that's at the bottom of the drawer, just send it to me and we'll figure it out. Your journey through the world of sports. So we talked about the idea that got into your brain, hey, I'm not going to go into finance. I'm going into sports. How did that get you to Ohio University? And then give us a quick GPS through the positions that you've held and the highlights and lowlights along the way.
So coming from with the St. Cloud River Bats, the owner of the team was actually an Ohio University alum through the Sports Ed graduate program. So as I was considering what to do next after working a couple of years in summer collegiate baseball, he introduced me into the program and was fortunate enough to go right to Ohio from St. Cloud State University, my undergrad. And then from there, was able to pick up an internship with the Washington Nationals for a summer when they relocated from Montreal that first year. And after that, finishing the program, was lucky enough to get introduced to you, Andy, and then also Mike Redlich, another OU alum, and get a chance to be a manager of corporate partnership sales for the Grizzlies. So at that point in time, I thought I was only going to work for a professional team that relocated from Canada. That was my current path. So I was there for 3.5 years, followed both you, Andy, and Red out to the San Francisco 49ers in a similar capacity, selling corporate partnerships. Went back to the Midwest with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Indy 500 to be their director of partnerships. Came back west to the Niners, boomerang back, which is very rare in the industry based on what I've seen, to the Niners and the director of partnerships role. And then got promoted to the VP role. And then about 2 months ago, got promoted to the chief revenue officer role. So fortunate to work for multiple great properties. Lots of losing seasons, as you know, Andy, across all the properties that I've worked for. I've been really good at leaving teams right before they get good and coming back right after they get bad again. So that's my claim to fame so far.
Brent, on one minute.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, on one end of working for the 49ers and then to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where really you can't lose. It's just a matter of how many fans are you going to have show up. Talk about some of your experiences there and how they differ from being in a team and in an environment like the NFL versus just a it's probably they call it the month of May here, right? A 1 month event.
Yeah, it's a good question. So there's a lot of similarities in terms of being in the partnership sales role where you're really, you know, your season is just abbreviated where you're selling across a month. There's obviously other events at Indianapolis that you can sell across for the Speedway. But really you have to look at how do you use social and digital to expand your platform and just make it more of a 365. But yeah, it's different in the fact that you don't have the win and loss feeling that you do at a traditional stick and ball team. But there's definitely a lot of crossover and similarity in terms of how you sell partnerships.
And in terms of the lessons that you learned, and I think Andy would hit on this as well. I mean, what are some of the lessons that you've learned across, you know, that journey that you've made, you know, from San Francisco to Indy and back? And kind of up the ranks where you're at now.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is, you know, I break it down and I'm pretty simple when it comes to how I attack a job. First and foremost, do your job and do your job well, right? At the end of the day, I think sometimes people are looking too far out in their careers versus, you know, focusing on the task at hand. So that's where I've always started at every position that I've taken on. And then once kind of that piece is checked off, then what can you really raise your hand for in terms of finding new ownable projects that, you know, a lot of the times are going to involve nights and weekends to knock off some of those ownable projects. But really, if you're doing both of those things and you have some flexibility in terms of where you can work, the fact that you're probably not going to make a lot of money as you start off your sports career, and you're not going to have much of a work-life balance. I think if you're managing all three of those pieces, you get a chance to be really successful in the industry.
So we've talked about it. You know, I always make jokes about my season in Hoops Hades with the 9-73 76ers way back in the early 70s. But you're speaking to major corporate decision makers when things aren't going well. We all know that it's very simple, like, hey, you want your own facsimile Super Bowl ring, or how about we're flying on the team plane to this place? How do you deal with losing seasons specifically as you're talking with corporate decision makers?
No, it's a great question. And that's part of what you signed up for on the business side of a sports team. You can't control your product at the end of the day, right? So, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, it's the only thing that I know is I've mostly worked for losing seasons and losing teams.
Don't call them losing teams. Call them franchises that lost games. Because if you call them losing teams, that sort of connotes that we on the business side might be part of that losing, right? We don't want to do that.
Fair point. Fair point. I'll change, I'll change my terminology and verbiage on that. But no, I think you got to prepare for the fact that you're not going to have a winning season on the field, right? Otherwise, you're not doing yourselves a favor to pretend like you're going to win every single year. So for us, and the way that we've thought about it with the Niners, is what's our unique selling proposition here for businesses to want to associate with the team regardless of wins and losses? And something that we've stumbled into on our end is the fact that the 49ers have a legacy brand, and we also have an innovative mentality, which, you know, I'm not sure how many teams have both. There's a lot of teams that are legacy and there's a lot of teams that are innovative, but I'm not sure how many cross both of those spectrums. So that's a piece that we lean on our end. And we also lean on a lot of third-party research. A gentleman that we're leaning on right now by the name of Michael Lynch used to oversee global partnerships for Visa, both for the Olympics and NFL. And as part of that, you know, with him on the research perspective, we simply asked the question and did a custom survey around the fact that, hey, we haven't won on the field, but there still has to be gains by associating your brand with the Niners brand. And we hired him, and the results came back with flying colors for the positive for the Niners. So you have to be honest with your partners and not paint, you know, the perfect picture for them, but also show them that associating with your brand, regardless of wins and losses, is a positive for them.
So people don't necessarily look at, and you raised it as a positive point, teams these days are not just whatever sport they play. They're in the operation business of their facility. They may be in food and beverage. They may be in global marketing. They may be a major factor in big events. It just so happens that you guys have, you know, an associated business or associated businesses, Elevate, etc. And if you ask people in the Bay Area, oh, incidentally, after 40 bowls are played, actually 41, where will the championship of college football be played in 2019? So walk us through how, you know, you have a day job, but as you said, you got a lot of other day jobs too.
Yeah, so it's the piece in leaning back on the fact and how we're a legacy brand with an innovative mentality, I think, you know, what our ownership group is trying to do is really diversify themselves, which helps our partners and helps our stakeholders as well. So really, we're a football team first is the way we define ourselves. But then on the back end, we're also a sports entertainment company, or we're trying to build ourselves into a sports entertainment company. So as part of that, we took on the Bay Area host committee duties for the college football national championship game at Levi's Stadium. So we have a lot of operational and revenue responsibilities tied to that. That group is also helping us bid on World Cup for 2026 and also another Super Bowl at Levi's Stadium as well. So beyond the Niners business, we have the host committee business here in the Bay Area that falls underneath our umbrella. Our president and my boss, Al, has a startup with Ticketmaster and Live Nation along with Oakview Group and Harris Blitzer, where we've created a company called Elevate. So they're out consulting in a sales and marketing capacity for sports entertainment ventures and properties. So that's another piece of our business. We also just opened a gym concept, 49ers Fit. We have an app company, Venue Next, that's creating apps for venues. So really, as you're looking at all this, it helps us tell our innovative story, number one, generates additional revenue streams beyond just the team itself. And then also, for anyone investing dollars with us from a partnership standpoint or elsewhere, it gives us the opportunity to present multiple platforms to teach these brands based on their objectives.
Brent, based on what you've kind of been through in your career, how much of that is an advantage in the sense that you know, yes, it's other streams of revenue, but there are other ways to engage partners than just the 8, 9, 10 football games a year you might have.
I think it's becoming more and more a competitive advantage for us. So let's just take, you know, what's happened on the field for us this year. Very unfortunate with some injuries on our end, but we have a nice shining light at the end of this year, or as we flip the calendar to 19, I should say, with the college football champ game being here. So our partners have an entire 49ers season, and then they're also able to get involved with, you know, the second most watched game in the U.S. every year, hosted at a venue that they're a partner with.
Important point when you think about Super Bowl 50, holy mackerel, Santa Clara, Levi's Stadium, and the college football championship, you know, played within a short period of time that some cities will never get, never have the opportunity to host. And while we're on that particular area of discussion, if you look at what you're doing with Elevate, what the Cowboys and the Yankees have done with Legends, off the top of your head, you know, teams are into real estate and what the Giants are doing now, the Patriots, and what the Warriors are going to be doing in San Francisco. What is the level of competition now? Who are the four or five large players, maybe on the team side, that are using their expertise to do more than just whatever sport? You're partnered with the 76ers, right, in Elevate? Their ownership group.
It's a good question. Yeah. So Harris Blitzer's involved with the Sixers and Devils and Prudential Center. Obviously, like you mentioned, the Cowboys and Yankees are on the Legends side. Niners are obviously part of the Elevate group as well. I've seen, you know, the Patriots have an arm and a Ventures arm on their front as well. The Dodgers are doing some things in the technology startup space. So, you know, I think there's more and more teams are starting to diversify themselves. You know, those off the top of my head are the ones that I lean to. I'm sure I'm missing several, but those are the ones that you probably read about the most.
Well, and on top of Andy's question, obviously these things didn't exist, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, 10 years ago when you maybe were in your first stint with the 49ers. You have this in place right now. But what are maybe some areas you're focused on in improving even further, or looking ahead to the future, thinking, well, this is going to get us, you know, ahead of the game right now for the next year, 2, 3 years, but what about 5 years from now?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's also challenging to look in the crystal ball sometimes as well. I'd say, you know, for us, obviously, any potential new venture or business venture that we're looking into is interesting, whether it comes from taking a stake in the company or consulting. Is you know, anything that pops up in the sports entertainment world, we're probably going to sniff around on just to check the validity of it. And then on the other side, which I look at, is the fan experience side and how technology comes into play. You know, there's a lot of talk around AR, VR, et cetera. You know, what's right now, I think they're very niche in terms of how they're being used, but what's the next technology that's really going to, you know, be a technology that's going to be used by the mass market and the mass audience versus a very niche technology? You know, we always love to beta test here just based on where we're based in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. With partners, and we're going back and forth on several things. We have an AR partner. We're working with Intel on VR applications. But what's really the next technology piece that's going to take off? You know, now that everyone's pretty advanced when it comes to social and digital, digital ticketing is pretty widespread at this point in time. But what's that next piece that's really going to help the fan experience?
Andy's an expert on that, right?
I've seen the future, and I got to tell you that it's absolutely futuristic. I can tell you that. And as a segue to what you were discussing, being literally and figuratively in the heart of the Silicon Valley, what is your, and you can be diplomatic here, but what's your view of all of these billion-dollar companies or ones that are getting to that point, in terms of how they're looking at sports, not necessarily the Niners, but I know I've seen, you know, an incredible change in their thinking over the last few years, but you're banging on doors every day. What's your gut tell you about how far down the road we are with these technological giants really understanding, you know, how sports can be used to their advantage?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one we deal with every day. I mean, if you go back to right before we were opening Levi Stadium, Andy, when you were here, you know, the most common objection from all the technology companies is, hey, we're bigger than you guys. We don't need you. From a branding perspective, which, you know, is a fair objection. So what we've kind of turned on its head is, how can we be a case study for these technology companies? I'll lean on SAP is probably the most recent and relevant one to the conversation. So SAP is a ginormous global software company. And, you know, we had some branding in place for them, but they said, hey, we really want to lean on the Niners to use a case study that we can help sell products internationally. So we ended up figuring out with them how to pull all of our data streams from ticketing to parking to concessions to fan feedback and pull all that data in real time. So we can see that that data coming in real time into what we call an executive huddle presented by SAP. And our business analytics team is able to make decisions on the fly to help the operational flow and the fan satisfaction on a game day come to life. So without SAP, we were getting survey data and data back in 2 to 3 days. Now with SAP's help, we're literally getting data back in real time. So what's beneficial for SAP is they can walk people through this data center at a 49ers game and showcase how they can bring software to life. And then they can go and use that as a B2B story in the marketplace. So where we've seen success in our technology partnerships is really getting them to a point where they're helping us solve a problem, either on the business side or the football side, and allowing them to take it to market.
What types of businesses outside of sports do you follow for lessons, you know, that you want, you see them as disruptors, you see them as well-strategized businesses that you could learn from?
Yeah, I'm a big front-to-back reader of both the SBJ and Forbes every single week. You know, as part of that, I mean, I'm really watching Amazon, probably like everybody is, just in terms of how they're taking over the world to a certain degree. But not only them, but I really like understanding all of our partners' businesses, because there's almost always an application that you can take back. So whether it's tucking it from Toyota to Intel to Pepsi to Budweiser, you name it, and understanding how they're connecting with their customers. At the end of the day, you know, for us to be successful, our main revenue streams are ticket sales, suite sales, and partnership sales. So if you don't understand your customers, you're never going to be able to grow your business. So I'd say leaning on our current partners and then just watching what Amazon's doing right now are the two areas that I lean on the most.
Are there people that you lean on in that San Francisco area to learn about the new and up and coming things, Brent, in terms of connecting with those who are kind of at the forefront?
Yeah, I mean, some of my personal network, but also just staying up on reading Silicon Valley Business Journal. And, you know, tapping into our partners. We've got some partners like Intel that are on the forefront of a lot of things just based on the fact that their products are in a lot of the new technology that's available. So every time I meet with a partner, I'm just asking, you know, what's next on the horizon from them. And it's amazing kind of the knowledge sources that they're sitting on.
Sure.
And you get to talk to me.
Of course.
Yeah. So As you look at what you're doing now and how far you've come in such a relatively short period of time, and how you've navigated a lot of different jobs in different geographies, Is there, and I'm not trying to move you out of your office now that you have this cool new title, but is there an ultimate dream that you see in the future for you and the family?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we've got an 18-month-old and a 3-week-old at home. So I think I'm anchored here at least for a little while if I want to keep my marriage. I love California as well. It's been an incredible journey west for myself and my family. My ultimate goal, though, is to become a president of a sports team in the long run. I'm not in a rush by any stretch of the imagination. I absolutely love my role because I get to balance the Niners piece with all the other business ventures that we're diving into. So it's just expanding kind of the breadth and depth of what I'm able to do on a daily basis, which is exciting. On the future, as opportunities present themselves, we'll definitely be interested to take that next step at some point in time, but absolutely in no rush and love my current role.
Brent, a follow up to the fact that you've got two little ones at home, how has your work-life balance changed? Kind of going back to what you were talking earlier in the episode, you know, with the different jobs that you've had and moving around, what does that look like? And, you know, maybe what advice do you have for those who are listening that either, you know, are just starting and need work-life balance advice or those who are in your position with young ones at home?
My advice is it's less of a balance and it's just life. At the end of the day, you set your life however you want. It's set, whether it's work, whether it's home time, whether it's a combination of, I mean, with the advent of the iPhone and all the mobile devices, at the end of the day, you can work and be at home and bring your kids to work and everything else. So in my opinion, I try to focus less on the work-life balance and more on the fact that it's your life.
And if you had one or two suggestions to what, you know, I like to call the young sports careerists, those people that go, well, let's see, there's Hirschman, there's Dolish, there's Shoeb, there's a lot of people, that proves anybody could do it, which actually is true. I'll only speak for myself. What would some of those pieces of advice be?
I think first and foremost, especially if you're launching off in your career, make sure you're aligning with good people versus a logo. You know, if it's a team logo that you're searching for, you're not searching for the right things. Seek out the right people to work for. I've been fortunate, obviously, Andy, to work with you, and every step of the way in my career, I've had, you know, my superior has been a mentor to me, and I've been fortunate for that. Not being tied to geography or a specific income level obviously helps early in your career. As you get later in your career, you can have as you establish yourself, you can start deciding on where you want to live and how much you're looking to make. But when you're kicking off your career, I'm not even sure I could have pointed to where Memphis was on a map when I was first talking to you, Andy. Obviously, I didn't tell you that in the interview, but as part of that, you just got to go work for the right people and know that they're going to help take care of you and give you the resources to be successful.
In terms of what you look at, with the people underneath you and like you said, trying to work for good people, how do you keep the perspective of how you manage others and what you can be from a service perspective to those that do work for you?
I think the first thing is making sure that everyone knows that you have their back, because if that isn't very clear with the individuals that are working for you, then they're not going to be as productive as you'd like them to be, and you're not going to be taking care of the customers that are investing with you as well. So my first piece is making sure you have the backs of your employees, but also you need to make sure you hold them accountable as well. So, you know, I try to make sure every 6 months that there's clear defined goals for the individuals that I'm working with, but at the same time, making sure I have their back, whether they make a mistake or not, to help them get to those goals and achieve those goals.
Andy, in terms of how you approach things, you know, say working with Brent and having yourself be a mentor for Brent. How did you approach those relationships in terms of, you know, knowing that Brent wanted to probably go to a bunch of different places, but making sure that he did the best job he could for you? How did you manage that?
Well, I don't think I ever used the word me. I don't have an invisible ego, but Brent could agree or not that it was all about the team of people. He mentioned it earlier. You know, get me to a place with good people, not necessarily a cool logo or a cool city or even more money and a better title, because that can be fleeting. And where I've seen the greatest growth in Brent's career is being comfortable by being uncomfortable. And I don't know if we've talked about this before, Jake, but there are so many incredibly capable young men and women that are in this business today.
Andy started to ask a question. Apparently wanted to drop off the episode. So I'm going to go ahead and finish off here with Brent with the last question in that, you know, as you look towards 2019, 2020, and you're continuously trying to grow, what are maybe some areas of improvement on your own side of things that people could take to their desks and try and work on a daily basis to, you know, continuously improve themselves and try and get better every day?
Yeah, I mean, very, very specific to the new role that I have here. So I spent the majority of my career in the corporate partnership world, and now it's this new role taking on the ticketing side of the business and the suite side of the business. So for me, the first couple of months in this new role has really just been being a sponge to that side of our business, and then mm-hmm. figuring out where we can make some improvements across all of our revenue streams. So my biggest piece that I'm looking at for 2019 is how can I help really drive a sales culture and an activation and service culture within the 49ers across all of our revenue verticals. But prior to doing that, I need to make sure that I fully understand the current business that we have in place and then what the direction we are moving forward.
No, that's fantastic. And we somehow just got Andy back on. So look at that. He can wrap up the episode here, Andy.
Well, you know, I disappeared there for a while. Being in the heart of the Silicon Valley, I know that there's a lot of hacking going on. So I think people around the world want to get all of the knowledge that they can glean in life in the front office. So I think some superpower was trying to knock me off there. But it is, you know, Brent, I think you and Jake can ascribe to this. We see the teamwork that happens on the field every day. And that's what the fans are paying their money for. They don't necessarily see what's happening in the front office. But the really good organizations have incredible teamwork in their offices. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be with some good ones and some not so good ones. And Brent, I would ask you to just, you know, you can close it about the whole concept, Jake, you too, on, you know, the value of teamwork, not necessarily on the field, but in what you do every day in your job in the office for a franchise or a school or an event.
Yeah, it's the teamwork piece is definitely critical. You know, as you look at a sports organization, I'd say maybe taking it a little to the side, you know, we have to be stewards of the community at the end of the day. I mean, it's one of the only places where people still shut down and hang out with one another in a social environment, whether you're cheering the team on or just coming out to hang out with friends. So I think sports teams in general should be and are good community stewards and help, you know, individuals connect with one another at the end of the day. So that teamwork piece is important, not only in the front office, but on the community as well.
Yeah, Brent, I mean, I think from a teamwork perspective, you know, even in college athletics, you've got 18, 19, in some cases, 30 different teams that across the board, they've got all sorts of obstacles that they're trying to hurdle. And then on the athletic department side, you've got many different departments that you're trying to work with constantly across different goals. I think that that teamwork piece that you're talking about, you try and wrap around the community that that school is at, and kind of same thing with the pro organization. So to Andy's point, I think that's huge and something that we can all focus on in 2019 as we look forward. Brent, we really appreciate your time. We know you're a busy guy trying to make a lot of money, so we appreciate it. Andy, always appreciate your time as well, and looking forward to more episodes on Life in the Front Office in 2019.
It's great, Brent. Good luck when St. Cloud State plays Alabama in the national championship. I think it could be one of the most incredible upsets in the history of college sports. So good luck.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.